Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Hey, and welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. Tonight we have a tremendous episode in line for you. We have a great warrior, true martial artist from the sport, a gentleman that I look up to and I truly love, you know, his style, the way he is in the sport, and, you know, what he stands for. You know, on the line with me tonight, joining me as my co-host is Mr. Robbie Lopez. You know, we're going to jump right in. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, the honor is truly all ours, sir. You know, when you look at life and you look at the career that you have and you still continue to have, you know, it's probably a true blessing in many aspects to you. But after doing a little bit of research on you, I found out that you truly have a greater passion than the sport itself, and that being family. What is it about John Fitch that keeps him so grounded and such a family man and have him given back to life in so many angles?
I don't know, man. It's just the way I came up. I always enjoyed being with my family. I had a big family. Fitch family is a big family. And our family gatherings were always like the parties. So I just grew up loving that and wanted to experience more of that as I got to be an adult. And it's just kind of one of the things that goes on in life. You need to, you know, grow and learn and then someday pass it on, pass your genes on. It's not for everybody, but, you know, if we didn't have people reproducing, where would we be?
Right. That's so true. It's so true. You know, John, I look at your career. It's been tremendous, you know, but there's one question I told myself that I was always going to ask you if I ever got you on the show. You know, I've had just about everybody on my radio show, so when I look at your record, you know, the one thing that sticks out to me is you probably got more canceled fights with Jake Shields than any other fighter in the sport. What is the reasoning behind that, bro?
I don't know. I mean, the fight just never came together. We were always kind of around each other because we were both in the Bay Area. We had a couple grappling matches, and we were sure we'd eventually fight, but we were in different organizations, and then when he finally got to the UFC, we just kind of circled around each other, and we never ended up fighting. So, it was great to finally get a chance to fight him after all these years.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Robbie?
It's got to be a good feeling whenever you're playing cat and mouse with someone like that, you know, to finally get to fight each other.
And, I mean, we were training. We trained together for a long time, too, because especially when we were in different organizations, because you weren't going to get better training than the top guy in another organization. So we would train together knowing that there wasn't any chance of us fighting. And then as soon as you signed with the UFC, we kind of stopped training.
Oh, wow. What a trip.
I mean, like, Gilbert Melendez used to train with us a lot, too. But then him and Josh Thompson were going to fight, so Melendez had to kind of stop coming around. But, yeah, we all trained together a lot.
Right. That's always a good way to know that you're at a badass gym. You know what I mean? If you have all these people training and then all these opportunities happening so they actually can't come train with the other competition, that's pretty good little formula.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we ran things like boxing, though, we'd all be possibly fighting each other, and then we'd get paid for sparring with each other. So it'd be a little different.
Yeah,
a little different scheme.
I totally agree. And you know, for those who aren't familiar, I want you to go ahead and if you could tell our listeners and everyone what exactly the MMAFA is, the Mixed Martial Artists Fighting Association, while we're on the topic.
Yeah, we're just an association of fighters, kind of like the Screen Actors Guild. So we're independent contractors, so we can't unionize. We're not trying to unionize under one company. We want to represent all fighters everywhere. from every country equally. So we do it in the form of an association. So we're fighting and helping, trying to make things better for fighters.
Yes, and that's something that I also believe deeply in and I'm a part of. I spoke to Rob earlier today. I'm going to actually try to have him come on the show at some point to drop some knowledge about the movement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, John, you know, I'll kind of jump in on that for a little bit because I'm old school here. I've been doing the show for 10 years, and I have a lot of friends, Antonio McKee, Vinicius Cortez, and others that are pushing for this movement. I just had Antonio McKee on, and I've dealt with people that are dealing with Couture and everybody on this level. And, you know, one assumption that we did make, and, you know, I'd like to get your thought on this. You know, a lot of people, when Conor McGregor first initially went to California and got his boxing license, you know, one thing people didn't realize that attributed to in Conor's career, because you look at it, he gets his boxing license, now he's covered by the Muhammad Ali Act. Would you say that that would be a fair assumption that most mixed martial arts fighters should be sanctioned in boxing so they're covered under the Muhammad Ali Act?
No, it's a clear representation of what's wrong with the sport. Like, this guy has all of these rights and all of these things protecting him with a boxing license that don't exist in MMA. It's a sharp contrast. It makes it very obvious for people to see. That's what's wrong with the sport. That's why it's broken. That's why we need the Muhammad Ali Act extended to cover all combat sports athletes.
You know, I agree with you, and like I said, I'm for the cause. I've done shows, you know, on this basis, and I've had Antonio McKee and Vinny and others, you know, on the show.
Antonio,
I believe I even had somebody from the. I'm sorry.
Oh, so yeah, Antonio's been helping out. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think there was even an individual from the administration of it that came on that certain particular episode. You know, I think it's a tremendous thing what you're doing for the sport, because you look at, I'm old school, so I'm going to speak in that aspect. You look at where the sport has gone. You know, if they still say it's in its infancy, then, you know, there's going to be things that are coming up. But you look at the things that have transpired since the sport truly has evolved. You've got grit and grime fighters like yourself, and then you have these new era fighters that have changed the way the sport is seen and have gone the route of entertainment. What is it like for John Fitch to see these transitions from the sport he truly loved into a sport that has truly gone the way of whoever has the biggest mouth, you know, sometimes is going to get the best card?
I mean, you know, I don't even have a problem with, you know, those kind of big mouth shows and guys selling that way. It's fine. I don't care about the Chael Sonnens and those guys, the McGregors and all those. I don't care if people are buying fights and putting on fights and getting themselves in a position to fight big fights because they're talking or they're out of the cage. Antics are crazy. I don't mind that. What I care about is that there's some meritocracy in the actual framework of the sport. So if you're ranked number one contender, you should have a right to fight the title holder. I care that the belt is controlled by an independent sanctioned body, not by one promoter. That way you don't see anybody messing with the rankings and whatever. I want to see independent rankings, so it's more of a legitimate sport. I don't care about all the show stuff. I don't want to stop that. There's nothing that the Muhammad Ali Act will put forward that will change anything about what the UFC has to do about putting on exciting shows and exciting fights. They can still put on those big fights. They can still put on GSP and Bisping. They can still do that stuff. But with the Muhammad Ali Act, what happens is at least once a year they have to have a real fight, right, for the title. They don't get to decide who holds the title for what reason. They don't just get to make titles up and then take them away for no reason. It's a different sanctioning body who gets to control the title. And then people get to look at the finances so they know how much money they're generating. So they'll get to negotiate real money, real percentages on their fight purses and they're guaranteed the money. So it's more about just fair competition and free trade than it is about, limiting how people get into those fights. You know, those guys will happen, but people like real competition. People like sport. They're gonna want to tune in to watch the number one, number two guy fight.
Yeah, this is true, man. This stuff is definitely true. I mean, amen to that. It's the future.
You know, I mean, I think Mayweather is a perfect example. You know, he's a boring fighter, but he runs his mouth, and people pay big money to watch him fight. They're paying to watch him lose. It's free market. You know, that he's able to do that because people are willing to pay to watch him do it.
He could sell the sizzle. Yep, exactly. Don, you know, you've been a huge personal inspiration to me as a fan over the years and as a fighter. But I just have to say, your last fight, man, was freaking incredible. Like, it almost had me in tears. I was so worked up and so into it. What the hell went through your head after that fight? And what has it been like to not just get that belt this time around, but also you're holding the World Series of Fighting belt? You know what I mean? After all these years and all the criticism and bullshit and with the UFC and stuff like that, like, how the hell did that feel, man? How did your family react?
No, it's a great feeling to win that belt. And it's another example of what's wrong with the sport. We got the World Series, got new investors, so new investors changed the name of the promotion, and they decided they're going to do a tournament for the belt every year. So I lost my title. So I was world champion of World Series of Fighting, but I'm not the world champion of Professional Fighters League. I was just another two guys to go into the tournament. Well, I mean, me fighting this long in my career, that's where I should be, you know, holding a belt, using that belt, leveraging that belt to fight people ranked higher than me, people with other belts, in order to get paid. But I can't because I'm locked in with one company, and now I'm not even a title holder.
Right. That fight, though, I mean, I was just watching it, and I was impressed about Homeboy. I didn't know much about him, and I was like, damn, this guy's got some heart, you know? And then...
Brian Foster, he's a scrapper, and he's the type of guy... Those are the type of fights I like, because those are the guys that are fighting to win. Like, I've complained about this before. There's a lot of guys I fought, and their whole purpose is not to get finished.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when I fight somebody who's trying to win, it becomes fireworks. When I fight somebody who's trying not to get finished, it's a lot slower.
Well, you silenced the critics that night, and you showed them all how to finish a damn fight. Like, people had you counted out, bro, and when you came back, it was like a freaking action movie. It was so rad.
Yeah, ran into a right hand. I shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but yeah,
it was
a difficult fight because it was humid, and their canvas was very slippery, and the extra humidity and water, it was very difficult to find any footing. We were slipping all over the place. When I was on top in the first round, like, I couldn't even posture up. My feet keep sliding out from underneath me. My knees are sliding underneath me. It was very, very frustrating to have to die.
My last fight, I kept slipping. Every time I'd throw a kick, I'd fucking slip because the shit was so greased up, too. I hate that, man.
You know, John, you look at your record, it's a who's who of the sport. You know, if you had to look back over your shoulder, just deep in thought, when you look back at all the wars that you've been through, what one do you hold closest to your heart? Which one is the most relevant to you, if you could possibly even name one?
Oh, I'm sorry, what was that again?
I said, I said you fought the who's who in the sport. I said, if you could look back over your shoulder and pick a fight that truly was the one that meant the most to you, what fight would that be?
Man, I mean, it's hard to pick one. There's a lot of them that were just pretty great. I don't know if there was any one that was more than any other. The fight in Brazil against Eric Silva was just an incredible experience altogether. That whole trip down there, even the fight camp leading up to it, and the trip down there in Brazil, and then, you know, the crowd screaming "You're gonna die" in Portuguese, and it was one of the better ones. There was a whole stadium of people that were, beginning of the fight, were screaming that I was gonna die, and by the end of the fight, they were cheering for me. So it was one of the most rememberable moments, I think.
That's cool. I like that. Now you transitioned from, you know, basically transitioned from the UFC to World Series of Fighting in 2013. How difficult was it? Was that of a transition for you, John, if any?
I mean, it's definitely a difficult transition. I mean, it's hard for anybody to admit that it is, but it is. You know, you're going from a much bigger stage, more consistent fights, to less money, you know, and you're going to less money too. So it's harder to get the training done. You're putting more pressure on you. You know, I live in California, so I think there was definitely times I wasn't prepared for fights or my head wasn't in the right place. So since, you know, the last year and a half, I think things have gotten since before the Okami fight, I think they've gotten a lot better. all around, making a little bit more money. Wife's working too, so she's pulling in some extra cash. So it's like more time for training, more time for kids, and everything balances out better.
Definitely. Robbie?
Now, John, I know that especially during fight camp and things like this, you keep a pretty clean diet, pretty tight regimen. When the fights are over, you're kind of like me, and you like to unleash that inner fat kid. What's your favorite number one? I always see some good-ass food on your page. What's your favorite number one, like, must-haves once you're done with that diet, man, to celebrate?
I mean, ice cream is pretty much a staple on anything. But, yeah, there's some good Vietnamese food, too. There's, this place that has like this lobster noodle stuff here in San Jose. It's pretty incredible. But I think I've got some pictures of that up on my Instagram somewhere.
Hell yeah.
You know, now, John, it's... go ahead, Robbie. I apologize. I thought you were done.
It's all right. No, I just wanted to, while we were on the subject of stuff like that, Will you tell me about the garage dojo? That thing is coming together, man. Like, is that where we put in the extra work?
Yeah, it was just I just got tired of driving to the gym to lift weights and then driving back to do cardio later or whatever. So now I just I put some money into some weights at home, and now I've got a place to stretch and then lift some weights. And I also got this little portable sauna thing. It's pretty cool, so I can sit in that thing. So it's a lot easier. I can do stuff from home, and it saves me travel time, you know, because I lift pretty much every day, but I keep my lifts condensed, so I can bust through them in like 45, 55 minutes, no problem. So I don't need to add another 40 minutes of driving or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that sounds awesome, man. That's perfect.
You know, John, when we look in the future, you know, this organization is being built to help the fighters. What do you think it's going to take in legislation or just in the sport itself to bring this to true apparition?
Ali Act. Ali Act is the key. We passed the Ali Act. We put all our efforts in the Ali Act. Fighters... can then decide on what they want to do. But, you know, the Fighter Association is here for people to join and take the helm and take it the direction they want. You know, it'll be up to the fighters at that point. But the freedom comes from the Ali Act. Once that happens, then people will have the negotiating leverage to have the courage to be able to join an association or to speak out or to actually – try to negotiate real terms on a contract.
You know, the reason I took up on this years ago when it first initially, when Antonio and some of the older folks in the sport started pushing for this. The reason I backed it, because if you truly look at it, you know, it's sad to say that you guys go out there and you put on a show, these people, they love it, they love you on TV, but in reality, their garbage man gets insurance. Their garbage man gets things that not even the professional fighter that they love so much gets, and that saddens me and sickens me in life. What is it going to take for us to change the mentality of people to understand that your garbage man is getting insurance coverage, but you don't even want to push it or allow it to happen for a fighter?
Really, it's up to the fighters to get it done. I hate to say it, but it doesn't really matter what the fans are thinking about it, because historically speaking, after every single labor dispute that's ever happened in any sport, the fans pretty much always sided with management, and they came back after the strike or the lockout or whatever was over with. So regardless of whether or not the players got what they wanted or not, the fans still were there to watch. The fans want to watch, and then mostly they don't want their sport interrupted. So you might as well stand up for what you deserve, stand up for your own rights, and make money for yourself, because the fans, basically, they're going to be there to continue watching the sport.
Oh, the sport's, it's not going to go away anytime soon. Yeah. But I do like that analogy that, I mean,
you,
the garbage
you might
fan,
as well
but...
fight and get paid more, get paid what you're deserve. Or it's not about getting paid more, honestly. What it's about is about getting the right to find out what your market value is without having restraints on the market. Right now, UFC has restraints placed on the market. The Ali Act will remove those restraints, and then we'll all be able to naturally find the lift in our pay.
Yeah, and I think it's deserving. I mean, because I do matchmaking and I manage some fighters, so I truly know what some of the sport get paid. And, you know, I think people would be quite shocked if they actually seen what some fighters do get paid. You know, one thing I was glad that you decided to come on the show, because you could truly talk about the sport. You're a true veteran. You've seen all aspects of it. There's not very many promotions that you haven't fought for. What has John Fitch, if you know, the best way to put this, if you could write down or paraphrase on a piece of paper what the sport has meant to John Fitch for future generations to look at, what would that statement say?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I just, I'm just a stubborn guy, and I know that what went down with my career didn't follow any pattern of meritocracy. It didn't make any real sense, and I don't think that anybody else should have to go through that. I don't think they should be limited by somebody else's judgment. I think it should be left up to the individual based on winning and losing and selling on his own and cutting his own deals should show their success or failure, not somebody else making decisions for them.
Robbie?
I agree. Now, John, like Don was saying, you've had such a long, incredible, fruitful career, legendary and inspiring. Is there any dream kind of fights or opponents that you've never really got to face, someone that you always really was looking forward to, or are you still to this day kind of like think, all right, this isn't over until me and that guy, we meet up one day?
I really always hoped that I'd get to fight George St. Pierre again. I thought I'd done enough to prove a rematch, but it never happened.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would have liked to have seen that, too. Sure. Now, what would you say was probably your worst fight experience over all these years thus far, or just weirdest in general?
I think when I fought Damian Maia, I was like, I got really sick the night before, and I probably should have pulled out, but I didn't. But, that was always one one fight I wish I would have had a redo on.
Right.
You know, John, we kind of touched a little bit on it before the show. You know, you happen to train at a gym that is very close to me. That being AKA, you know, I've got a lot of friends out of there, including DC. You know, what would you say would be your greatest takeaway of knowledge that you've gotten from Javi?
You know, Javi was one of the first guys to teach me how to kind of move around on my feet a little bit, and then how to sit down on my punches. I kind of had to work on the same couple lessons that he showed me early on over and over and over again over the years.
Yeah. You know, Javi's a tremendous guy, and I truly appreciate what he's done for many athletes. You know, John, and I know it's hard. Like I told you, my show kind of touches both sides, the sport and your life. But if you had to sit down and, you know, look back at the sport in general, what has it truly meant to you, not just as a man, but as a warrior?
You know, I feel like I'm still in the middle of it to really have a feeling on it like that. There's still a lot of turmoil because we're fighting to shape the sport. So it's hard for me to have a set feeling on what's all happened. I feel like it's still the middle of an explosion. Like the dust hasn't even started to settle yet. So we've got to kind of wait. Because, you know, if the sport stays the same way and nothing changes and guys keep getting screwed and low pay and kind of dies and fizzles out and there's only one organization after a while, you know, I'll have a negative outlook on it. But I'm fighting to make sure that doesn't happen.
Most definitely. Now, I told you we'd keep this to 25 minutes, John. We've already gone 2 minutes over that. Yeah, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. Anything you want to say, any sponsors, any friends, any family, or just anything you would like to add to the program, the floor is yours, sir.
No. Thanks for watching and supporting. Check out my YouTube channel, Official John Fitch. I got Fitch Smash is my Facebook page. I'm trying to build that up. You can check it out. I'm offering, you know, seminars, small group lessons, stuff like that. Hit me up, fight consultations, that type of stuff.
Well, John, I truly appreciate it, as I'm sure Robbie does. Robbie, why don't you say your goodbyes? And, John, thank you so much for joining the program.
All right, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate your time so much, man. What's the future plans for John Fitch? What are we doing in life and in the cage next? Is there anything written or inked yet?
I'm trying to set up some seminars right now. Anything else I can like that, speaking engagements, whatever. And then, I don't know, I'm trying to get news soon about a fight. I would like to fight again before the end of the year. But I know the Professional Fighters League has some idea about a tournament that they want to start in January. So I'm hoping that I don't have to sit and wait for that. But I don't know. We'll see.
Right on.
Well
we
John.
Love you, brother. And we got you back, you know. Feel free to – I'll share all your seminar stuff and whatnot. We'll be in touch.
All right, man. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You have a good night, John. Thank you.
Thanks, Fish.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was John Fitch. We kept him on 3 minutes longer than I told him we would. Kind of got lost track of time. You know, what I took away from the interview, Robbie, was, you know, his true love for the Fighters Union, and I understand it. You know, as we spoke, we're getting ready to jump on the line with a Hall of Fame boxer and legend in Virgil Hill. You know, when you look at what Conor McGregor did by getting his boxing license, he pretty much jumped and fell under the Muhammad Ali Act, even as an MMA fighter. You know, I suggest to a lot of the MMA fighters out there, if you're able to afford your boxing license, you know, I suggest you do so. I'll be putting information out on the page for the union and things like that for you to get a hold of if you want to reach out to them and figure out what you can do and help in their plight. I look forward to doing more shows on this discussion because Antonio McKee, Randy Couture and a lot of the people that I deal with are pressing very hard for this. Robbie, what did you take away from today's, you know, show so far?
Oh, man, that, you know, John Fitch, as I already knew, was an extremely humble, you know, family-oriented individual who's got his sights set on a very pure goal, man. He's been working really hard on you know, not just getting that fucking belt back rightfully, but also with the Mixed Martial Artists Fighters Association. And it's a hard thing when you ask him, you know, how what the sport's done for him, how he feels. That's got to be hard to answer because, like you said, he's kind of in progress to that. He don't want to just end the book on a bad note. He wants to change that book. And, you know, we need more people like him. God bless him, man. He's a hell of a guy.
Oh, well, you know, one thing he kind of misunderstood, you know, the question that I put in front of him. You know, it was not necessarily, you know, that his career is any means coming to an end. It was just, you know, he's been around since 2002. So when you look at it in that aspect, you kind of just wanted to get a thought, a synopsis on what his take was just to, you know, to date. Well, with that being said, we're going to jump and try to give Virgil Hill the benefit of the doubt. Last time he put his phone, I believe, on Do Not Disturb, and hopefully we'll see if he answers tonight. He's on the West Coast also. But let's get one thing right, though. He is a Missouri boy.
Hello.
Hello, Virgil. This is Don McGuire with The Fighter's Voice. How you doing tonight, my friend?
Good, good.
Well, on the line with me is a fighter in the sport of mixed martial arts, Mr. Robbie Lopez. I asked him to co-host with me tonight. You know, Virgil, I'm going to kind of give you a bad time because the first interview we did was tremendous, and I had to delete that for certain purposes. But I called you the other night, and, man, you know, live radio is a pain in the butt sometimes, but, you know, and things happen so people don't show up. And I'm going to let my listeners know now, it wasn't Virgil. It wasn't his fault whether he put the phone on Do Not Disturb or it just died on him, but we got you here now.
Thank you for that. Yeah.
But, you know, when you look at what you've done in the sport of boxing, it's tremendous. And I just want to kind of take a step away from that for a minute because I believe what you do with the kids and other coaches that aren't on such a pinnacle or the level that you're on in the sport, you continue to give back, you continue to make friends and relish in the fact in the future. What is it about Virgil Hill that has him living life in that aspect, even though you can truly not even partake in it?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, I've accomplished some things in my life and stuff. I was just very, very fortunate. I had good people with me and stuff like that. You know, I'm from the grassroots area. I'm from North Dakota and stuff. So I don't think I'm any different than anybody else. And to give back to a program that allowed me to see and do things that I never, ever thought that, you know, it never even come to mind. Back where I come from and stuff, you know, I mean, those just weren't the hopes and dreams. And, you know, I'm just very, very fortunate that I was able to, you know, pretty much see the whole world and see how people live and stuff. So I was very, very fortunate.
Yes, you truly are. And the reason I'm going to bring this back up is because we did have to do away with the episode last time, and we spoke of a gentleman that we both truly love, a gentleman that has truly earned the right to work with our youth and truly represents what it is to be a real man in life. What is it about Dallas Cook that has inspired Virgil Hill as much as he has?
Well, Dallas is, I mean, Dallas should be one of our main trainers on the U.S. boxing team. I mean, what he's accomplished in his area, in a very, very small area, and you know, the what he produces out of that small area is just phenomenal. He is truly something special. Really something special.
I have to agree. Robbie?
Yeah, hey Virgil, this is Robbie Lopez. How are you?
How you doing, Robbie?
Great, man. Great. It's a good Tuesday.
Good, good.
Hey, for all our listeners out there that aren't super familiar with your history and everything, will you go ahead and let everyone know kind of about who you are, what you do, and what your record
okay.
is?
Sure. I had an amateur record of 288-11, which is quite a few fights comparative to now. But back in my day, most of our Olympic team guys had over 150, 200 fights. So it sounds like a lot nowadays, but back when I was fighting, you know, we did a lot of fighting. I'm a 5-time world champion. I won 4 WBA belts and 1 IBF belt, and I am a 2013 Hall of Famer.
Wow.
Silver medalist in the 1984 Olympics. That's it.
How did Virgil Hill find boxing? How did you discover that?
Well, I saw it on TV. I lived out my parents. We lived on a farm ranch, and I saw Golden Glove boxing on TV. And that was back in the days when the Golden Gloves was fought in Chicago, and the champions fought the finals. They wore Golden Gloves, and I saw that on TV and wanted to fight. And then the 76 Olympics with Ray Leonard and Howard Davis, and you know all those guys. And I asked my dad. I said, if we ever move to a city, now a city for me is only 50,000 people, less than 50,000 people. So my father was a plumber as well. So when we moved to Grand Forks, North Dakota, he came home from work and asked me if I wanted to box. And I went down there and 8 years old and started boxing. Lost my first fight and then went on to have a record of 288-11.
That's it. Wow.
You know,
well, thing. Yes.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to say, you know, you speak so humbly about life, about your career. It's a true testament to who you are. So, and it kind of leads me into my next question, bro. Go back to 1984. You know, it's November 11th. I mean, November 15th, you debut at Madison Square Garden. What was that day like in the life of Virgil Hill?
Well, it was change. Yeah, it changed my life. You know, I didn't know that the natural progression in boxing was to after the Olympics is to turn pro because nobody ever did it where I was from. So to think that I, you know, I'm doing the same thing as Marvin Hagler and Ray Leonard and all those guys was a little overwhelming at first. But to fight in New York's Madison Square Gardens for your first fight was pretty exciting.
I mean, and then you go on to have this extremely illustrious career. As you know, you've been on the show the first time with my buddy that's a walking encyclopedia of boxing, Barry Frost. But then you go on to have this this record that is 51-7. You look at that, and let's say, Virgil, you take a moment and you just sit back and you look at your boxing record page or you look at everything that you've done in your life to this point. When you look back over your shoulder, you look at your page, did you ever surmise that you would end up defining the sport as a veteran?
Well, I'll tell you, I wish I had time to sit back and look at that. I'm so busy, you know, training fighters and trying to promote fights and help with the amateur program and stuff. I don't have time to look back at that, and I'm so busy trying to, you know, help the kids and get their way started that I don't really look back. You know, I take things from what I did and the trainers that I had. I mean, I was fortunate to have Eddie Futch and Freddie Roach and Mike Hall and, you know, a host of other amateur coaches as well that I'm very fortunate. So, you know, I take a little bit of everything from them and work with my kids. You know, Dallas Cook was an inspiration. This guy, the things that he does is phenomenal in comparative to the big cities with the big city gyms and stuff like that. This guy is, what he does is inspirational to me as a trainer as well. And so I don't really look back. You know, I just try to keep going forward.
Well, okay, let's take the question in a different angle. You know, you're creating the future. You're creating the future of a sport we all love, you know, in the sweet science.
Mm.
But not only are you doing that, you're taking the knowledge from Freddie Roach. Every mentor that Virgil Hill has had in his corner, and you're able to give this knowledge to the youth. What does it mean to Virgil Hill to be able to extend that knowledge and create a better future for our sport?
Well, it's awesome. It's awesome. I mean, the kids today, I mean, you know, and our sport is very, very tough because you know, kids nowadays, they have so many different options. And I didn't have a lot of options when I was coming up. But these kids now, they have MMA, you know, they have a host of other different options. And so, you know, to find the kids that are really dedicated to the sport and stuff is few and far between. And so the ones that you have, you got to hold on to and, you know, you got to direct them in the right way and bring them up best you can.
Now, Virgil, is there any contemporary boxers that you're impressed with or found yourself becoming a fan of?
Boy, I'll tell you, you know, I don't watch too many fights on TV. I think Mayweather is probably one of the best boxers in the sport, but I don't know if he's good for the sport, you
right.
know. You know, the guys that I came up and admired and respected and worshipped and all that good stuff were finishers, you know.
Exactly.
I don't know that Floyd finishes. And so because he is the eye of boxing and the eye of, you know, a lot of combative sports, people take on his persona in the way that he was trying to fight with the left hand down and rolling the shoulder and stuff like that, which is absolutely wrong. But it works for him. But everybody tries to emulate, you know, what, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard was, you know, Muhammad Ali, shoe shine, you know, the shuffle, you know, everybody picked that stuff up. And so I don't necessarily know that he is, you know, a good face for boxing, but, yeah. God, I rambled on. I forgot the dang question.
It brings up the second part of my question that you kind of actually
mm-hmm.
touched on a little bit, and that's from when you started boxing up to modern day boxing, what have you noticed has changed?
A lack of fundamental boxing. I mean, a jab, a right hand, a left hook. Fundamental boxing is getting lost. If you go to these amateur fights now, all you see is these little kids. They're like cockfighting, going to a cockfight, and you watch these kids run to the middle of the ring and just throw a bunch of punches, and no one's out there boxing. And it doesn't do anything for the program not to teach these kids how to fight and how to box. A basic jab is totally lost in the sport. Totally lost. Nobody jabs anymore. They don't know how to set up punches and stuff. It's just to the middle, and it's a free-for-all. And I told my kids that the one thing is, I mean, we might not win a lot of amateur fights, but you're going to be prepared if you want to take this further, because I'm going to teach you how to box. That's what's lost.
You know, I have to agree with you, Virgil. You know, as you know, I donate all my time to USA Boxing, American Boxing, and the Golden Gloves. It's one thing that I've always felt. You give back to the future, and you do it without expectation. And I generally don't tell anybody that, you know, that I even do it for free. But, you know, you're so right. When I go to these events and I see some gyms, they come so well prepared, then you look at, there's 80% that come and they have lost the fundamentals of it. Do you think that the sport is broken to a point that, you know, it can't be fixed? Or do you think that people like Dallas Cook and others that truly have the passion like you do need to step up and reorganize these programs?
Reorganize the programs. There, it can still be done. Look, if you don't teach it, you can't teach it. You know what I mean? If I don't teach you how to throw a proper jab and a proper stance, and then you become a coach, you don't know it. That's lost. It's gone. Basic fundamentals can be taught. You got to take the time to teach it. It can come back. I mean, you know. You know, Floyd was a consummate professional fighter. I mean, look at his father, look at his uncle. Those guys were phenomenal.
Now, see, one thing I like is you're very forthwith in your answers. So I'm going to ask you a question, and I kind of feel like I'm disrespecting asking you this, but, you know, when you look at the Mayweather-McGregor card, to me, I think it's the biggest atrocity that's ever happened to the sport of the sweet science. I told myself if I ever had somebody that was as legitimate as you, that I would get their synapses or their thoughts on what they think about this circus atrocity in my thought.
Well, he's not fighting the best guy. Okay, got beat by Diaz or whatever his name was, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did. He's not fighting the best guy. That's the best guy.
Yeah. Do you think?
I mean, you're fighting the you're fighting the best media guy.
The best talker. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all that is. That's all that is. You're not fighting the best guy. He got beat. Just like when Manny fought and he lost, and then Mayweather fought him. You know, it was already damaged goods. To me. You know what I mean? Fight the best MMA guy that's in your weight. You know, it's just McGregor generates more money and more press because he's loose. Is he going to beat the best boxer in boxing? No, he's not. He's not going to beat Mayweather. Can he come up with a lucky shot? Well, anybody in boxing can come up with that. But fundamentally, on paper, not a chance. Now, if you're going to do an MMA fight, you know, Mayweather loses in one round, possibly. You know what I mean? You're talking about apples and oranges.
Well, see, the reason I got one more part to add to this. The reason I ask is there's been a lot of groups and discussions that are popping up, you know, stating the fact that Floyd is so in debt with the IRS that, you know, this could be a situation that could possibly turn into a rematch or even a trilogy. Would, you know, looking at it in that aspect, you know, would you say that even Mayweather has taken this to the entertainment aspect, or do you think that deep down in
sure,
court,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but do you think it's going to taint the beautiful sport of the sweet science?
Well, you know, I mean, he's the look in boxing, you know. Obviously, McGregor's the look in MMA. It's the tube. It's, you know, at one point they were talking about, you know, Ronda Rousey fighting Mayweather. She got beat. she got beat, and so they drummed up this guy. You know what I mean? Gave her the best fighter of the year. You know what I'm saying? It's those guys behind the closed doors and stuff, they're juggling balls. What's going to make the most money? How much can, you know, what we're going to collect, you know, it's business. And, you know, it's a billion, it just so happens it's a $1 billion business. So, there you go.
Well said. Robbie?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel you 100%, bro. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, at one point they were talking about Ronda Rousey fighting him.
I just love,
you know, what would happen if...
Go ahead, Virgil.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
What would happen if... I'd be totally lost, bro. If Ronda Rousey beat Mayweather, I would give up the sport in its entirety just because.
Yeah. True that. But you know, and I didn't answer your question. But I mean, could it be possible that he loses and then they have a rematch? I don't think so, just because of what's on the line for Mayweather. He's breaking that record, or Rocky Marciano's record too. In the same thing for 50, you know, to have the most successful title offenses or whatever it is that Rocky Marciano had. So I don't see him jeopardizing that. You know what I mean? I mean, the guy is he's a billionaire. So for, you know, a few hundred more million dollars, I don't know.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Now, so needless to say, with your experience and outlook, you got Mayweather whooping McGregor. Is it going to go decision, or how do you see it?
I haven't really looked at McConnor and how he takes a shot and stuff, but Floyd is a guy that in a few rounds, he's got you figured out, and he has a game plan, and he sticks to it. And, I don't know that McConnor has that kind of savvy. You know what I mean?
Have you seen the video of Connor sparring Paulie that they released the other day?
Yeah, I know, but Paulie never could break an egg.
Right, exactly.
Come on. No disrespect to him, because he's an unbelievable commentator and a fighter as well. You know, I can't compare him to Mayweather, not a chance. You know, it's not the same thing.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Do you think that Conor rehydrating and coming in and actually fighting closer to about 170, 175 pounds is going to factor in at all with the power?
Well, they're not going to allow you to do it. You can only gain so much weight.
Yes,
you know, they weigh you. Yeah, they don't allow you to gain. You can only gain a certain percentage of weight, so they're not going to allow him to blow up like that. And believe me, they've got catch weights and everything else. Everything has been thought out to the T.
Yeah, he was bragging about
everything.
That the other day, but I was like, huh?
Well, yeah, go ahead, but you look. You do not carry the golden scepter.
Right.
Mayweather does.
You know, it's kind of ironic, you know, that whole scenario. And it kind of just, to me, leaves a little bit of a foul taste in my mouth, you know, when I look at the sport. You know, but Virgil, I always told myself, if I ever had you back on, I was going to ask you a question that truly puzzled me. You accrue this tremendous record, and yet on You know, back in 2015, after you fought Jimmy Campbell, you stepped away from the ring. What was perplexed in the life of Virgil Hill to step away from the ring? Was it you felt that you had did your time, or did you feel that?
Oh no, God! I was done. I am glad to be done. I was done before then. The only reason why I got back into a ring is because I was in a car wreck with my son. And I went to the doctor, and a neurosurgeon comes out and he goes, well, your boxing days are over and that's it. And, you know, you're done and stuff. And I'd already been kind of partially retired anyway. But I said, if I took that note of what you just said, my whole life people have been telling me I can't do this and I can't do that. And that's what spurred it on. That is the only reason why I got back in there at 51 years old and stuff. I am happy to be done, you know, doing. I'm glad to be giving back another way other than being in the ring. It's just too hard. It was hard. It took me 4 years. 4 years to get ready, to get back. And to start my own promotion so that somebody would actually take it, you know, so that was a blessing, that part of it. But yeah, I'm glad to be done. It's time to pass that on. Boxing and combative sports are too unforgiving. If you're not in there to want to be a champion and stuff, you don't need to be in there.
Yeah,
you gotta,
you
know, it's too unforgiving.
I love that you say that because it reminds me, you know, transitioning over, you know, into this sport, as you know I did, you know, originally starting out in boxing with HBO and Showtime and others back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Your words remind me of a very young professor in the sport of mixed martial arts, that being James Krause. You know, I had a fighter hit me up and say that they wanted to train with him, so I asked Professor Krause, you know, he goes, well, it depends. He goes, does he want to be a fighter? Does he want to be a pro that has a long run, or does he want to be a world champion? And I go, well, you know, to be quite honest with you, sir, I never really, you know, looked at it that way. He goes, well, that's the harsh reality of the sport. He said, if you want to be a champion, it's going to take 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, dedication. And he says, he said only 1% of the people that actually think they want to succeed in this sport or want to be, you know, say they want to be a champion do. He says, so I suggest to whoever you want to bring me that you ask them and get it hammered out, because this sport is real. This is life. And he says, unless your heart's in it, there's no reason to even step up in the gym. And, you know,
yeah,
I look at you.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, well, I was going to add to that. I mean, I'm not saying that you can't make a good living and you know, you know, being the top 15, top 20 is special, and it is, but if you're not, it's a lifestyle. It's not, well, you know, I'm not boxing, so I lay this down. Nobody, no professional in any professional sport, basketball players have basketball gyms in their house. You know what I mean? Swimmers have swimming pools. You know, it's something that it's a specialty. You can't, it's not something that you lay down and you think you can pick it back up and start all over. It's not that. And if you're not willing to sacrifice and to make this a way of life, the dieting, the food, the training 3 times a day and stuff, dude, it's like I said, it's the unforgiving and the punishment of the gym, the wear and tear. The fight is not the fight. The fight is in the gym every day. Every day sparring 6 fresh guys. The fight, when you go to the fight, that's nothing. The damage comes in the training and stuff like that, you know? Every day grinding. You got to be willing to put that in.
Well, yeah, you do, 1,000%, because, You know, I coming from both sides of the sport, and, you know, I've transitioned into jiu-jitsu and even wrestling in the recent years, and I've taken away a more profound respect for the true athletes. The true athletes in this sport are the ones that become world champions, the ones that truly, you know, put in that grind and deserve what they're getting in life. And, you know, my friend, you truly are an example of what the sport is all about. You're humble. You're transparent. You walk the walk, and your belief is creating a better future for us. With that being said, you know, I got to say, you know, Virgil, the first time I had you on the show, I walked away kind of fanboyed, you know, because you don't get an opportunity to meet a multiple world champion, a Hall of Fame fighter, and still hear the love, the passion that you had from day one, you know, and that's a tremendous attribute to you. You truly are, in my mind, one of the greatest that's ever existed in the sport, and you're continuing this legacy with our kids. That's a true testament to what.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. Remember, I mean, everybody's opinionated, and it's my opinion. It doesn't count for, you know, a whole heck of a lot. It's just an opinion. But I do want to see. I mean, boxing gave me a better life, a better outlook in life, better opportunities, and I met my wife, my children. You know, met my wife in the Olympics and stuff, and it gave me so much more than I can ever give back to it. And so,
yes.
You know, I'm fortunate.
Yes, you really have. Robbie, I'm going to go ahead and let Robbie ask you a couple more, and then we'll go ahead and wrap you up, Virgil, because I know you got a busy schedule.
That's all right.
Virgil, would you like to share with us what probably your hands-down craziest fight moment over your career has been?
Jeez, you know, I'll tell you. I mean, whenever you fight out of the country, you know, and it's just different, you know, everything is stacked against you. You know, they make everything difficult. And so, you know, just being, you know, trying to, acclimate or I don't know what the word is, just to get to the fight, you know, all those, you know, like, even though they were big fights and stuff, you know, for in Europe, it was still difficult. You know, the transitioning over, you know, going from the United States to France or Germany and stuff, you know, you got to be there a week. You got to bring, you know, 10 people and sparring for, it's just stuff like that was difficult. And luckily enough, I had good people that, you know, kept a lot of that stuff away from me. So, but yeah. Just, you know, stuff like that.
For sure.
Stuff you don't have control over, you know?
Right. You know, for your first fight, to be your first match, to be at Madison Square Garden, I mean, that kind of sets the bar so high in amazing experiences. What was it like to compete in the Olympics? Like what was different about competing in the Olympics compared to just a really big staged show? And how did that feel taking home that medal?
Well, I'll tell you, it was bittersweet for me because I had won the fight and then it got overturned and then they gave it to the Korean. So, you know, that part of it sucked. But the way I approached the Olympics was like any other tournament. I had to cut weight. You know, I was struggling with the weight, so... And once you do the official weigh-in and stuff like that and the fight start, you're not with anybody. You're by yourself. You got to show up by yourself and you meet everybody in, you know, in the auditorium because everybody's fighting different days for 2 weeks. So cutting weight and all that other stuff is all by yourself. So I was kind of like a lonely guy, because I was the fat guy in the sauna and stuff like that, and having to manage my own food and stuff. And yeah, it was, you know, I looked at it like a different tournament. It didn't hit me till I got home.
Right.
You know, it was just, you know, it was weird, you know, and that's the way I had to look at it, because otherwise you might be in awe of it.
Yes. Most definitely. You know, Virgil, I got one more question for you, if you don't mind. If you had to make a statement, because I respect you so much on this matter, you know, and there's a lot of youth and parents out there that listen to my programming, because I try to keep my shows as that of a family nature. If there was a message that you could give to the youth of America that are wanting to get into boxing, those that are in boxing, about what the sport has done for you and how they can benefit from it, what would this statement be, sir?
Oh, Lord, it like I said earlier, it changed my life. It gave me my wife. It gave me my children. It gave me a better life that I never thought possible. I grew up, even though I grew up country poor, which is different than, you know, being in the projects and living on the res and stuff like that. But nevertheless, still poor. Just the things that I got to do, I never dreamed of. I didn't know that it was possible, because where I'm from, nobody ever did it. So I didn't know the natural transitioning from the amateurs to the pro. And then, you know, the winning a world title and stuff, I didn't know. Everything was new. And everything was new with my group of people, because nobody, you know, except for, you know, Eddie Futch, the great Eddie Futch, and that was a big help in that aspect of it. But I just didn't know. And then I had to learn the business of boxing, and that's not always a pleasant thing to have to do on your own. But yeah, it gives me who I am now.
Yes. Yeah, it truly has. And you know, even though you don't realize it, the lives that you've touched along the creation and the making of Virgil Hill, and the aspects that you've attributed back, have truly changed the lives of many, you know. And like I said, we have one brother that we truly love, and that being Dallas Cook. And, you know, I think if it wasn't for him.
Super guy.
Oh, yeah, I would have left boxing and any aspect of it years ago if it wasn't for Dallas Cook. He is a tremendous soul and a tremendous blessing in both of our lives. And I'm glad you feel the same way about the man that I do. You know, with that being said, Virgil, I'm going to hand the microphone over to you. Anything that you would like to add to the program, any social media sites or any friends and family or any shout-outs for that matter, the floor is yours, champ.
Well, thank you. I mean, all I have to say is, you know, believe in the dream. You know, dreams can come true. And hard work and dedication, you know, can make your dreams come true. And you got to dream the dream and do the work. That's about it.
You know, on that note, Robbie, if you'd like to say goodbye to Virgil, now's your time. I don't want to keep the champ very much longer.
Yeah, Virgil, this is a wonderful experience, man. I really appreciate your time, and I think everything you do for the kids and the community and for boxing. You're a true inspiration. I love how real and how raw you are. And
thanks, Robbie. I appreciate it. Hopefully nobody got there. I stepped on any toes or anything. It's just my opinion. And,
oh, yeah.
And that's it.
That's the blessing about America, you know. I'm sorry, Robbie, I'll let you go in a second, but that's the blessing about America. You know, we have the right to freedom of speech and freedom of thought, and that's one thing that I encourage on my show, and people realize that it's just a personal thought, a personal opinion. He's not, you know, divulging anything towards anybody in any manner. Robbie, go
no.
ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, hey, I agree with everything you said. It was 100% real, man. It was no trash or nothing like that, you know? So we back it.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Nice to have someone speak the truth in their mind, you know?
Thanks, Robbie. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Virgil. Anytime, Virgil. My pleasure.
Yeah. All right. You know, Virgil, I just want to thank you again, brother. Thank you, and God bless you. And when are you going to be out here next so we can hook up and do something with these kids?
Oh, Lord, I don't know. I'm in the middle of one of my fighters has a youth, fighting for the youth IBF championship in Somalia, Australia. And then we have tournaments going on, so I'm so busy. Right now, busiest part of the time of the year for me. So I want to get home and see my mom, too, because that's where all my family is in Missouri.
Yeah, well, when you get here, bro, and your schedule allows you, you get with me in Dallas, and we'll make something happen. We'll do a day of shooting and videoing and get these kids out there and under the great representation of Virgil Hill. On that note, champ, God bless you, and you have a tremendous evening.
God bless you guys, too, and keep up the good work. Keep it strong. We need people like you.
Thank you so much, brother. We truly appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, the very humble Virgil Hill. You know, Robbie, when you look back and you think about all of his accolades, you notice he kind of swept them under the rug real quick.
Yeah, what an unbelievable life, man. He just mentioned it like it was taking out the, going to get lunch or something. He's just like, yeah, that's all.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but the thing that, you know, kind of exuded and is kind of, you could tell, resonated still in his head, and I could see why. You know, he physically did win the gold, and the fight was overturned. And so, you know, hence he took silver. And, you know, you look at that situation, and that's a perplexing situation in anybody's mind, MMA, boxing, or whatever. You know, here you theoretically won to have it overturned, and that'd be like a world champion losing their belt. You know, so when you look at that, and still to go on, and then to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, and have, you know, basically only two losses, or lessons learned in the double brackets, you know, after that long of a career, is a true testament to the man and the sport he loved.
Oh, for sure. And Virgil, if you're listening, you may not have, you know, you may have got that gold and got it taken away and stuff and got the silver that day with the match. But in life, brother, you got the gold because you got the girl. And look at you now. You're happy, married. That is the title that I bet you're most proud of.
Most definitely. And, you know, I love his humble walk. We're going to take a short time out. I'm going to play a little bit of music for a second for Mad Squalls. We're going to take a short time out. I'm going to make sure our next guest is lined up. Please stick with us. I've got Anthony Ruiz coming up next, a 16-year vet. Going out on a win and stepping away from the octagon, so you surely want to stay tuned and listen to him.
Oh, yes! Yes! Step on up, son! Come on, that's good! You gotta hold on to that fury!
Yo, yo, yo. 1 foot the paper, 2 foot show. 1 foot the paper, 2 foot show. 3 for those who can't comprehend my flow. 4 for the hustle, 5 for the grind. 6 for the struggle, it's my time to shine. 1 time for your mind, of course, I'm ready to blow, can't reach my quota. My thoughts deeper, my heart's colder, so is my shoulder blade. Really be seeking this false freedom, we are heathens, whether you like it or not. My advice to the preachers, get right what you got. Cause that hypocritical thinking will leave you speechless, more susceptible to weakness. My mind analyzes dialect of prior teachers, but the devil's in disguise, wanna annihilate the sequence. To be honest with you, I know God, but I don't admire scriptures. Usual liars do conspire sickness, not to mention they building lots of prisons, opting out positions too, leaving a new generation without a pot to piss in.
Well, we're gonna go ahead and jump. I haven't got a reply back from Anthony, but I know he's at work. he still agreed to do the show. Let's go ahead and give him a call and see what happens. I think
your
I might have
been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 559-76016.
I guess that kind of answers our question. You know, let me hit him. We'll hit him back here in a second. You know, first we had John Fitch on. You know, truly a humble, kind of a shy guy. He was more willing to talk about the fighters union and getting that going than truly himself in life. And you look at his career, it's tremendous. You know, one point of the interview that I did like, when I asked him how was it to transition, you know, from the UFC to World Series of Fighting. And, you know, the first thing he said, you know, was the difference in pay and that it was hard. You know, one thing people really don't understand, you know, you get acclimated to a certain situation in life and you're a tremendous, you know, warrior like John Fitch is, and then you have to start over basically from scratch. Robbie, you're a fighter. So when you walk away from one promotion into the next, how much of an issue does that become in you know, in the thought of John Fitch as you being a fighter? You know the scenario. How hard is that?
You know, that particular situation, I was unaware of that until he told us that tonight. I was wondering about that, and to me, I mean, that's super disrespectful. I mean, this is for him in particular, you know, this is a guy who's a name, who has so much experience, and to just make him have to keep earning that damn belt, like, that just blows my mind. It's a little rude and a little disrespectful, you know. It's like, what's it going to take for him to make the money that he deserves? He's like a Nolan Ryan face of the sport. You know, and the guy, those guys out there who are a couple years in, and they're more introverted, you know, personalities, and all of a sudden they've got money falling out of their pockets. Not that I'm saying, you know, John doesn't have a bunch of money, but when I think someone like John Fitch, then I think the dude should be well taken care of and very happy in his life with the combat sports. And to have to defend that belt, I mean, that just said a lot. It spoke his story that night, that fight, through and to endure like he did and to show why he's there and what being a veteran is like. He's been in deep water like that before, you know. People were counting him out and this and that, and you could tell it just clicked in his head, man. He went into Fitch smash mode and got his damn rightful belt, and it was really, really beautiful fight, really inspiring, truly to see. Probably one of the best fights I've seen with that promotion, to be honest.
You know, I have to agree with you. And you know what? I am transparent in life, and I made a rookie mistake, and I'll be the first one to admit it. I just went back in, and I looked at the time that I had allotted Anthony Ruiz. And so I'll reach back out to him tonight. The thing of it is, he's out on the West Coast also. And when I first set this show up, I had planned for him to go on last. The reason is that, like I stated earlier, he's a 16-year vet, you know, from Bellator. He just got his last win. I believe it was in nine fights. I could be wrong. And hung up the gloves. And while I initially told him 10:30, Central Time, which would be 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and right now it's only 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, so he's probably sleeping. So if you tuned in for the Anthony Ruiz interview, I apologize to both Anthony Ruiz and his fans and his family. I will get a hold of him tonight and make sure I have him on tomorrow afternoon. If not, I will have him on Thursday. I apologize to you, Anthony. It was a rookie move on my half. And, you know, one thing I do roll in life is transparency. So, I mean, other people who listen to my show realize that I get mad sometimes when I slay the slot and the fighter doesn't show up. And, You know, I've confirmed within 30 minutes of them coming on. But in all fairness, I made a huge rookie mistake. I didn't correct it. It's not Anthony Ruiz's fault. It is mine. We will get his story told tomorrow. If not tomorrow, then Thursday, as he is such a deserving fighter on his way out of the sport and transitioning into whatever aspect we'll find out, what, you know, being in the gym or whatever. I can't see him walking away from the sport after 16 years. Can you, Robbie?
No way, man. Not with that type of, you know, devotion already set. And, you know, I mean, you know, that's his life. That's been his life, 16 years. No way to walk away from that. That's really pretty deep. You know, Don, you're human, brother. I think everyone knows that you're human. And when we're dealing with all these different time zones, I mean, it's bound to happen. We have multiple time zones a show, and when it syncs up, it syncs up. I think that's just natural when we're trying to get all these good quality guests on.
Yes, you know, and we were going to add another guest, and which would have truly kind of put us in the realm of being close. But I mean, as we speak, you know, I'm sending him a text, you know, letting him know that I made a mistake on time. You know, I would like him to be, you know, on the show tomorrow or Thursday. But you know, if you look at the show we did have tonight, I mean, how fortunate are we? We had John Fitch, and then we've had a multiple world champion and Hall of Fame legend, Virgil Hill. You know, when you train in the sport of mixed martial arts, you know, what did you take away hearing the other side, per se, of the sport coming from the Sweet Science?
Well, I tell you, the way Virgil's outlook was, man, that kind of no BS, you know, about how people aren't boxing nowadays and about how you have to devote it and make it a lifestyle thing. Between that and how you had mentioned about Professor James Krause mentioning, you know, is this guy want a belt? Does he want to make this his life or a career? Is he just trying to fight a lot? I think that was huge. I think a lot of people needed to hear that. I mean, even when I heard that and heard the way Virgil was talking about the dedication, I mean, even it lit a little fire inside of me. And, you know, I'm fighting in about 6 weeks from today. And, man, it totally got me going. I've been in the zone, but hearing that, feeling like I'm walking away with this knowledge that's gotten saturated through my head from these great experienced warriors, I mean, I know it got me going. It got me motivated and made me feel like I'm making the right choice and I'm on the right track. And I think it was very important for our listeners to hear that kind of output.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of one thing I wanted to touch on. Come the first of the month, we will be transitioning into the syndication, which I still kind of just... I'm a humble dude, bro, and you know that, so it kind of rolls with me a little bit different than most people would think. You know, I never wanted to do this show and you know, with intent of making money off it. I was very hesitant with a syndication offer. I'm still kind of hindering the thought of doing it, but at the same time, it was put to me in this manner. You know, Don, you're taking your show from where it's at. You're not changing who you are or what it's about, but you're giving that many more people an opportunity to hear who the fighter truly is. And when I looked at it in that aspect, it kind of sat a little bit better with me, you know, knowing that I'm taking it from the 60 to 100,000 listens we get now and giving it an opportunity for up to 30 million people to hear the show. And... you know, it kind of scares me. I mean, I'm a humble guy. I don't expect much out of life. I would rather give than receive in many aspects. You know, so this is a big step for me. It's a big step for the show and everybody involved with it, from Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, to the United Way Merced, Affliction, the 86ers.net, you, Robbie, myself. This is a huge transition for the show. So to be able to take it in the syndication and be able to give the fighters that much more of a platform is truly, I guess, a history-making day for the Fighter's Voice. What's your thoughts, Robbie?
For sure, man, and I understand, you know, change is always kind of scary and this and that, but this is a blessing, brother, and it's not a change, it's a evolution. We're not changing anything, we're evolving. Like you said, the format's expanding, and I think it's going to be good for everyone involved. This is obviously something that needs to be heard, screamed from the mountaintops, and just show after show, we seem to get some of the best quality people, man, that are so real, and they have things to talk about. That's the best part. Like, it's not just people farting around or being goofy or asking the same redundant questions that you could turn on any sports channel or YouTube and hear these guys ask. I think it's a very comfortable show, and something like that is going to be a win-win because we're not going to change that format. We're just going to broadcast it farther. So I'm fully in support of it, and I'm excited, brother.
Yeah, you and me both, but, you know, it's kind of on the same note. It's like, you know, I guess I'm just too old school sometimes. You know, I'm backwards. I started out in syndicated radio and then went backwards, and now I'm going back. But, you know, it's a blessing in disguise. You know, it truly is. You know, the show's not going to change. I retained all the product. I retained the whole show, the name, everything in that aspect. So, you know, it's a hell of a deal that I got. You know, but it wouldn't be possible without the fighters and them coming on and truly sharing who they are, because I know what you guys go through. You know, if you're listening to the program today, realize this. How would you like to be shoved in a two-hour, be told you got a two-hour window from 1 to 3 in the afternoon, per se? And during that 2 hours, you have to do 20 to 30 to 40 interviews. You basically go from one show to another to another to another, and they call them two-hour media scrums. You get asked the same questions 30, 40 times in that 2 hours. By the end of it, you don't want to do radio. So in the words of the great assassin, Syed Awad, you know,
thank you
for allowing my show to be the place where the fighters get to share themselves and feel comfortable, like two guys sitting on the front porch or a guy and a girl sitting on the front porch having a pop, being able to actually share who you are is truly the foundation and the basis of the show. And I've always felt that I needed to give back to a sport that made me, and I feel that this next step is truly a step in the right direction. You know, Robbie, I know you're out there, you're in training camp, I know your day has been very, very long and stringent, but when you get back, I do want on the side of my neck, I do want a tattoo that says faith, because I'm putting my faith in this next step. I think it's something that needs to be iconic, memorialized. So, I know you'll hook that up, my brother. As always, I'm going to hand the mic to you. Any sponsors, any friends, family, social media, anything you got to add, bro, now is the time.
Yeah, of course, man. And, you know, family, you know, you're my fam, brother. Anything, tattoos aren't a... You know, for me to give you a tattoo like that, it's an honor for me, man. So, of course, I'm your brother. I share the love, and anything you need with that, it's always taken care of. You know, Rose Tattoo Parlor is where I work, www.tattoorobert.com. Get all your information. A lot of the top fighters regionally that have awesome tattoos were done there. Like to thank onitlabs.com. They give you the best supplements, natural earth-grown supplements. I am a big fan of Alpha Brain. I use it when I am doing artistic stuff, and I use it when I train and fight. Also, feel free to check out totalfightnews.com. It kind of shadows the show here and gives a little bit of topics. We also will be doing some coverage with Don, and follow us on Facebook, guys. We appreciate y'all, and tonight was a really exciting show. I feel like we were excited, the guests were excited, and we all got some good stuff out there to talk about, man. Some real stuff, real issues,
yeah,
and real personal things. It's great.
Yeah, except for me making an ass of myself, because theoretically, 2 hours from now is when Anthony Ruiz is supposed to come on. I can't believe I made a rookie mistake, but you know, I'm entitled. I think I'm entitled this time. On that note, I want to thank Finished MMA, Juan Martinez, brother. One team, one dream. Absolutely. Your family, I will have your back for the day I die. United Way Merced and United Way America. You know, if you get a thought, you got a couple cents, help a kid in need and change a life. You know, I truly back United Way Merced and all of its subsidiaries. And I believe in the future and what they're doing for people in need. You know, it's a real true organization. Affliction, thank you for the representation. The 86ers.net, Alfred, Freddie, man. Without you guys, wouldn't be able to, you know, truly share a great organization and people in their walk in life and what you're doing for individuals in need. You know, life has been a true blessing for me. On that note, Robbie, much love. We're going to take us out with a little bit more Mad Squabbles because I like the kid. I'm watching him grow. He's on tour right now, I believe, still with, he was with Redman and Method Man. I think he's with Busta Rhymes right now. On that note, you have a good night. God bless. Here's some Mad Squabbles.
Show, show. Hey, yo, pass me the mic. Let me spit. The camera's out. Squabbles. Look. Look, I said I would never finish last. I got my pen and pad, dismember mental lags. The residuals is in the trash. Let's get it started. Set up fresh as a vacuum carpet. Niggas are statues when I walk in. They plotting the far bigger schemes. You think you can stop me? It's all in your dreams. A lot of people think I'm dope, so I offer the fiends my tape and hope they crack it open. I'm trying to be a locomotive mogul, not a local no-show. Show no travesties. When I trash the beat and drastically attacking mannerisms with my faculty. Effects, I'm infatuated with the fact that we are fascinated by these whack MCs. I pass the pastor's passwords to my thought process to watch them sketch her as if the rapture was at hand, like I just slapped her with the backhand. Then I told her to do the shmoney dance around the